Mosley from Town of Yackel.
Jim Hodges, City of Camas.
Sam
Crummett, City of Battle Ground.
Ron Onslow, City of Richfield.
Jeff Swanson, City of the Center.
Dave Scott, City of Westfield.
Philip Johnson, Battle Ground.
Rebecca Royce, Clark County.
Rebecca Royce, Clark County. And Samantha Whitley, Clark County.
Okay, great. I would ask for a motion to approve the meeting minutes.
So moved. Second.
We've been seconded to accept the meeting minutes, which we have in our possession. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And passes. So now we have the application scoring. Who's going to do that? Okay.
I printed out the scoring guide, and I apologize because Lydia just reminded us that our email said, make sure you review the applications before the presentation meeting, and I have not sent it out to you to do that. So I'm going to do that today, right after this meeting. And, does everybody need a copy? Sorry. Thank you, Jim.
Neighborly Software.
So it'll be pretty straightforward. You'll get an email that says you've been assigned scoring for these set of applications, and you'll click the link, register your account, and using your email address, and you set your own password. And then when you log in on page 2 at the top, it's kind of faint, but you'll see when you log in, you'll just come right to the screen that says applications awaiting score. And you click on the little door with an arrow to go into that application. And then you'll get to the screen that's on the bottom, and you can complete the scoring if you click on the left-hand tab or review the application that's on the left-hand tab and all of the documents that the applicant submitted. Unfortunately, you'll have to click back and forth. You can't review the application and score within the application. You'll have to look at the application and then go into the scoring tab and put your score for each of the questions. And you guys have all of the points. Like last year and previous years, staff had scored some that we called the objective questions, and then you scored the subjective questions, but this year you're scoring 100% of them. And you'll see inside this scoring rubric that it shows the pieces of the question of what you're scoring, and then you can save it if you don't finish it, but you can submit it as final when you're done. And then we'll review all of your scores. There's only one score that I can think of that matched, we'll say, is going to be a certain amount of points for each percentage. So we'll make sure that all of the, that you've got the right match percentage scoring in there. But, or you can leave it blank and we'll make sure that it gets in there based on the amount of match that the applicant has proposed.
Can you repeat that last sentence? You said, I know you were saying there's
like
a
that
percent of match and then there's a score. Say that again.
Yeah, well, I think, I don't remember exactly what we said. If we said 1 point for every 10% of match, and if you guys put in a 10 and they only said they're putting in 10% match, we'll just adjust that to a 1
to go with
what we said.
You'll adjust it if we make a mistake.
Yes, or you can leave it blank if you don't want to do the math.
Okay.
That's how we did it last year, and then this year it's not. But we did say, in the housing one, we said if you're serving the population, the three populations that we identified, you get a point. I'm sorry, I should have printed that out. You get 1 point for each set of population that you're planning to serve. But I think they're all serving 100% of the populations that we wanted to address.
Okay.
I could also send
and
out.
You'll fix it.
And we'll fix it. We'll review everybody's scores and then put them into a spreadsheet before the March meeting so that we have everything verified.
Okay, are you finished with
that? That's all I have.
Does anybody else have any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Public facilities and neighborhood improvement presentations. Do we have one? Anyone? I'm here to make a presentation, so I will pass. All right, everybody's got a presentation. Okay, so this year, the city of West Utica doesn't have an infrastructure project application. We have a repairs to our social services building. We're requesting $227,000 for repairs to our social services building, which is shown in the photo here. It's right across the street from City Hall. If you've ever been to downtown West Utica, on the south side of the street from City Hall. The background of the building, this building is dates from the 1940s. It was a doctor's office. And then the city purchased it in December of 1989. CDBG funds were used to remodel the social services building starting in 2004. These are the grants that we've received before. You can kind of see a little before and after. That's before. This is after. $257,000 in 2004 and $130,000 in 2006. So what happens in this building? This is really a hub for programs serving low-income families from Camas, Washougal in the East County area. The primary user in this building is the Children's Home Society. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, but they advocate for healthy children and strong families. They do. They provide a lot of services. You can see in 2018, they served 873. When we got the data for this presentation, it was 2019 data, they were 600 plus, if that's not a full. Clark County WIC also operates out of this, and they serve about 345 clients per month each year. You're probably familiar with that program. Obviously, a lot happened there. And then Columbia River Mental Health does a little bit out of here. Talked to Craig a little bit. They enjoy being able to provide services out here. It's helpful to some of their clients, but you can see there's eight a month that they serve. So it's a really vital hub for social services. And what's interesting is the city owns this building and subsidizes this a little bit. I think it's fairly unique kind of a situation. This is an example of some of the things that happened there. 112 kids got backpacks, some clothing bags, toys under the Christmas tree. There's a regular stockpile of goods for low-income children distributed through the schools. Food, blankets, coats, they did diapers and hygiene projects. A lot of programs for families around education, particularly. There's a lot of activity going in and out of the building. There's a computer lab and telephone services that folks don't have their own way to access services. They can do that here. So this is what's going on. It's a $260,000 project. And basically, the outside of the building is kind of rotting, basically. So there's a lot of technical jargon here, but there's some siding and sheathing replacements, some new windows, some trim and flashing, some windowsill modifications. One of the windowsills, I guess, I don't know what happened over time, but now it's sloped. A couple of them are sloping into the building, which is causing obvious problems. Some fascia and gutter replacement, portion of the roof, little entryway, and then repainting all of that, and tuck pointing some brick. I got some photos here to just show. So there's just a couple of examples of the rotting exterior of the building. You can see that needs to get taken care of. A couple close-ups there. We had an architect do an evaluation for us. That's a quote from the architect. I'd like to read that. got to replace that cover. Thank you. Another quote from the architect. Some of the brick that needs to be repaired. Another photo of some of the window situations. Another quote from the architect about what the problem is and what needs to be done to fix it. More examples of the brick in just different places. Another quote from the architect.
architect. So the summary is, this is from the architect. We've got to do these things, or pretty soon it's going to be a life safety hazard, and then it's going to cost us $1 million to fix these things, which obviously would be untenable. Water's getting into the building. So it's a pretty serious situation for us. And it's been in service for 50 years. If we can get these repairs done, in about 5 to 10 years, we'll have to do the roof. But all of that will give us another 20 to 30 years before we got to step up and do some of this kind of stuff again. So, great partnership project there, and that's our story.
We have 5 minutes for questions. The people that are in the building, the various agencies, there's not enough money coming from them to pay for upkeep or their part as well. I mean, you see what I'm asking.
Yeah, why can't the tenants pay for it?
Why can't you have enough tenants to make the nut?
So we have the Children's Home Society. They're the primary tenant. We approached them to help with this. They don't have the funds to do it. They're barely making it to provide services there as a not-for-profit. We actually subsidize some of their staff out of our operating dollars to keep the place open. They're the main tenant of the Children's Home Society. Also approached Craig at Mental Health, and I got the same response from Craig about providing funding for this project.
Well, as you know, Craig built a building in Battle Ground. Not built a building, bought a building.
Bought a building.
Bought a building. And so maybe he's holding back. And the other question I would have, and then I'll let you know, how big is the building total square footage?
I don't think that.
A $250,000 is a lot of money. And what are you putting in anything? The city putting
yeah,
in?
Yeah, we have a match.
I didn't see it in here. Did I miss it somewhere?
It's an application. Yeah, it's in the application itself. The total cost he had was like $259,000, and
right.
Requested $2.7.
Okay, thank you.
The back side shows.
Yes, thank you.
Any other questions? Where does the Children's, do they get their money to operate?
I think it's some grants, I think a lot of donations, kind of like most not-for-profits.
They do serve foster children. I've had some of my kids be clients with the Children's Home Society. They do some pretty intensive work with some pretty hard kiddos.
Yeah. They've been doing good work in the East County. It's really an East County facility. I mean, it's in Washougal. Washougal owns this building, but it serves Camas, Washougal, and more than just question, but we're kind of fronting the building, which is a unique sort of scenario where the municipality's got the social services building.
Okay, any other questions? All right. Vancouver Housing Authority. Is there somebody here for that?
Yep.
Yeah.
They just walked in.
Okay. You're up.
Phase 2 of a multi-phase rehab project, and the budget
So the scope of the work, as you can kind of see here, the main. So there's. These are the designs that we have for the project so far. So this area is currently a basketball court. It's dilapidated, falling apart. It doesn't really have much going on. So the main item there is to convert that into an ADA accessible playground, as well as a gazebo area for residents to gather and congregate outside. And also there's going to be a trash enclosure, which is going to be just here. And that will also be made to be ADA accessible. Part of the reason that we're doing this is because we are increasing the capacity, and so these items are going to be essential to the long-term sustainability of the project. So this shows the funding of the sources of funding for our project. It's pretty simple. What we're applying for is the $244,000, and then we are going to match 20%, which will come out of our general funds. Because the shelters don't generate income, we cannot use our operating reserves for this, things like that. And so looking at the timeline of the project, we are estimating, we have a pretty conservative estimate of 5 to 6 months of construction, and we already have schematic designs, as I just showed you, because this is part of a multi-tiered process. So we just need to make slight modifications to the plans to be able to re-permit for this aspect of the project, and hope to wrap up next June. And then thinking about why this project is important, making these improvements to the exterior of orchards will allow BHA to include amenities that will improve or provide tenants with ADA accessible ways to interact with one another in outdoor areas, which is especially helpful for families with children. And seeing as we are increasing the bed count at the shelter currently, this will be really important because this is in close proximity to each other, and having some space to be outside is really valuable for both mental health and physical reasons. Providing them space to do that is kind of what we're hoping to do, and it will allow us to wrap up our multi-phase project for at Orchards. As well as and making improvements to the trash area is also essential because, like I said earlier, the capacity is increasing, and so we need to be able to accommodate that, and making it so that it's ADA accessible. It's currently not, and so making that maybe also an accessibility gain for us. So any questions? Yes.
Could you talk a little bit more about the permits, the status of that? I realize you
haven't
built it yet, but.
Mm-hmm. So we are currently undergoing the rehab on the interior. We don't have permits for the outside exterior work, but so we need to I'm not the construction manager on the project, so I'm not going to be able to speak to that process in depth, but my understanding is that we need to just make some minor adjustments and then resubmit for permits on this exterior work.
You're reasonably sure that you can get your permits in a timely manner, I guess, and get the money spent next year is what I'm hearing from you, I guess.
That's the idea, yeah. We're pretty much ready to just go and submit it now.
How many do you currently bed in there? How many beds do you currently have? And you said you're increasing it to 84?
84,
81. 81, 82. 84, 84. 85, 86.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so that's the first question. And then where's this located at?
It's in Clark County, but I'm not exactly sure.
You don't know the location?
It's in Orchards on Fort Plain.
Fort Plain? Okay.
5609.
A couple blocks from
Biden.
Thank you.
Wow.
I actually looked it up to see if it was in the county or if it was in the city of Mancos.
Okay.
So 56
and 102nd.
102nd. And how many beds do you currently have there?
I think our current capacity is around 60.
Okay, so you're over doubling it.
No.
You're going from 60 to 80. You're not going from 60 and adding 80.
Yes.
I just want to make sure. Okay, good. Thank you. Glad I clarified that.
Yes.
Different funding is funding the increased beds.
This is
yeah,
for
this
the
is just the exterior
site
work
only.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Cut and dry exterior. Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to confuse you on that.
This is the site for women and children, correct?
No, that's...
it's the site for full families?
Sorry?
It's the site for full families,
yes,
or...?
Yes, it does accommodate full families, but...
Yeah. What, you know, you're doing most of the work not on the building itself, though, right?
Correct. This is just exterior work on site.
I know. On site, but not the building itself.
No, we're not touching the building at all. Any other questions?
Any other questions, Council?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Actually,
you're going to do the second one?
Oh,
okay.
So the big ticket items on the preferred scope are we are converting eight existing units into, which are SROs, into four ADA accessible units. There is a big demand for ADA units for this population, and we've heard that from the tenants as well as from the people that are giving us the referrals, our partners. So we're also going to be improving the communal spaces to make them more inviting, comfortable, and accessible. For those with physical disabilities, currently some of the turn radius areas are not adequate enough. And so this includes lounge areas, laundry room, and the shared kitchens. We're also going to add parking at the site because there is considerable third floor parking. And this will be done with the creation of a new parking lot in the rear of the building, as well as a reconfiguration of the existing front parking lot. This will enable us to add ADA parking stalls that we only have a couple of, and make the ramps code compliant, as well as the walkways and pathways up to the building from the parking lot. So both scopes will be replacing some of the interior building systems, including the hot water heater, furnace, and increasing the attic insulation, so that will be up to code. And then on the preferred scope and not the alternative, improving or replacing the HVAC system. And then finally, we'll be on the preferred scope, we'll be replacing the exterior vinyl siding, windows, doors, and lighting. So that's a pretty large scope on the preferred side. So just walking you through some of the images we have. As you can see, those we're going to be replacing three existing balconies on the second floor, converting those. They're pretty underutilized at this time. Based on what we're hearing from property management. And so part of that will be we'll add units here. We'll add six units there, and you can kind of see that what that will look like, that difference between those two. So we'll be adding those additional six SROs, and then we will be taking two existing SROs, this is just a zoomed-in version of that same one, and converting them into one larger ADA unit. So looking, breaking down the sources of funding for these two different projects, we have the difference, the main difference between the two is the LIHTC equity and the City Affordable Housing Fund, as well as in this project it would be a VHA seller note and VHA funds, which are primarily coming from replacement reserves and from the general funds. And we also wanted to note that if we're not able to secure the LIHTC equity, the City Affordable Housing Fund is not. The City Affordable Housing Fund is contingent on us securing the LIHTC equity. And we were just shortlisted, we just found out, for on the allocation list for the Washington State Housing Finance Commission for this project. So while it's not secured, it is more than likely that we will be able to do that. So we're really hoping that we can target this preferred scope. And then the alternative is pretty straightforward. And as far as the project timelines, we hope to wrap up construction. We have a 16 to 18 month construction period for the preferred scope. So that will end wrap up around November of 2022. And for the alternative scope, the difference is that we'll finish next August. So thinking about why this is important, Central Park Place has a population of residents that are increasing in Vancouver, as well as Clark County. And many of the major systems in the building have reached the end of their useful life. So this is about bringing those up to and extending the life of the building, as well as increasing the amount of units that we're going to be able to take or be able to house tenants in and make them more responsive to the needs of the tenants that we have. So the changes will improve the efficiency of the building, it will lower the carbon footprint and extend the useful life by hopefully up to 40 plus years. And finally, when applying an economies of scale concept to it, it makes more sense to do the larger scope rather than piecemeal, reapplying and doing this over and over again to get to where we actually need to do the preferred scope. So, questions?
Questions?
You're on the VA campus?
Yes.
Is there any VA money?
In this project? No.
In this project, did you ask the VA for any money?
We did.
You did?
We did.
And the VA said?
No.
Okay. I don't know what LIHTC is.
Low Income Housing Tax Credit.
Thank you. And then, looking at this, five of us live north of Highway 500. This is in right across from Clark College. The benefit to the five cities here that are north of Highway 500, how does this benefit us?
We do take residents that are from we get referrals from YWCA Clark County, as well as from the VA, and the VA serves the entire region.
And then if $200,000 doesn't come from us, what happens?
We would readjust the scope of the work.
Just drop it by a half, roughly.
Depend on the alternative scope. We'd have to really think about what we want to do if we're not able to secure funding for the alternative scope, the preferred scope, which it looks like we're going to move forward with if we are indeed able to secure these low-income housing tax credits, which based on the allocation award that was put out last week by the Washington State Housing Finance Commission, I think we'll be able to do it, but we'll just have to reduce later.
Could you tell me when the building was built again?
1999.
You know, the thing that strikes me on that, 1999 to a person like me does not seem that very long ago.
21 years ago.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that long ago. And you know, you're saying you need to fix the ADA ramps and so forth. It seems like, I don't know. On the surface, to me, it's why wasn't it built that way to begin with? I don't understand that. You have ADA accessible, right?
I don't know if it was built up to the current code, because the code changes over time, so I think it's just about bringing it up to that code.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
It doesn't answer my question. I guess I'd have to go look at it to see exactly what you're talking about. But you know, I was born and raised in Vancouver. I haven't lived in Richfield 20 years yet. So when you say 2009 or 1999, whatever, it doesn't seem like that long ago that those things were not in place at the time.
You can see accessible parking, I think those are signs.
We do have that.
Yeah. But they're converting some units that are not accessible to accessible inside. And then, I don't know, there must be some other stuff where the code didn't provide it. So you want to, I'm assuming, you want to add some units, you want to convert some balconies, you want to do a fairly major scope of work to this building, you have to bring the building up to current code for energy and for accessibility. That's what's happening.
ADA was passed in 1990.
Yeah, and fire life safety.
So that's why curb cuts that you did back in 2000, if you were going to redo the street today, you have to do a different kind of curb
right.
cut.
Yeah, I'm not that one.
And 21 years ago, that's when you got your first Social Security check.
just
bring it into view.
You still in your 50s and 99?
I'm in a holding
pattern. I don't know what the life of vinyl siding is, but apparently it's right around 21 years or so.
That's
right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's at the end of its
execution. Maybe 5 or 30 years.
Yeah. The scope of work was based on a capital needs assessment.
Okay. Any other questions for the Vancouver Housing Authority?
Thank you.
Okay, we are going to go to the affordable housing and homeless presentations, and I'm assuming we
I'm
may
sorry,
have
Fred. Fred, we're a little bit, we're 10 minutes ahead. Are you ready?
Okay, I can absolutely be ready.
Sure.
Well, the developer housing wants to be on the call long if you're
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're up in Seattle, so they couldn't be here today to answer questions and present, but she's going to be there on the phone.
Who is that?
Mercy Housing representative.
And as chair and over 21 years old, I'd ask you to speak up.
Pretty close, yeah. Almost everyone's there. Yeah, definitely.
No.
Just learned about it today. Would we want to do second step while we're waiting to get a hold of Mercy? Since second step is here?
Yeah.
just reverse the order? You want to do that?
Sure.
Tim?
Are you okay with that?
Sure, yeah.
So first, a little bit about who we are. Second Step was established in 1995. Today we own 105 units of deeply affordable housing. 35 of those units are transitional, so people and families coming directly out of homelessness. 70 of those are permanent and what I would call transitional to permanent, so families coming out of homelessness, but it's a permanent home for them. More than 3/4 of the units are for people and families coming straight from homelessness. More than half are for households that are earning less than 30% of the area median income, so that's why we call it deeply affordable. We kind of have this little niche, one step past shelter is kind of how I think most affordable. We're also a CHODO, which you are probably familiar with that term, Community Housing Development Organization. So this basically means that at least 30% of our board of directors is comprised of people that live in low-income neighborhoods or are low-income households themselves. So for us, it's important to have that authentic voice of the people that we serve involved in our governance. We partner with everybody in town. We know that, you know, we occupy the housing piece of things, but there's others that are working on behavioral health, mental health, addictions, domestic violence, that we house a lot of the same clients, so we work closely together. Today we're housing more than 200 people. Circumstances common to our families are what you would sort of expect. Homelessness, low incomes, families that have someone with a disability, recovering from substance use disorders, fleeing domestic violence, and living very low incomes. Most of our units are scattered sites, so these are duplexes and triplexes kind of scattered around town. We have a couple of larger properties, but large for us is 25 or 30 units. And our strategy moving forward is to grow relatively small, so add a fourplex or a sixplex every year as we can. We don't really play in the same pools as some of the larger housing providers, which means that we're not usually competing for tax credits. We're trying to do what we can with our own equity and local funds. So the proposal that I have submitted is for $300,000 in home funds to acquire as many units as I can within the next year. And since I submitted the proposal, we actually have an acquisition project that's underway. Should I get that? I'll put that one there. So here's an acquisition project that's fairly new to us, that's very exciting. So we're going to build 8 new 3-bedroom, 2-bath units for homeless families with children up on Neal's Lane off of 4th Plain. We're hoping that we're able to break ground here in the next couple of months and that the project will be done by December of this year. The budget's about $2.5 million, hopefully less. Our real estate development partners in development. So funding partners there, again, we're trying to use local funds. So I've got some affordable housing funds. I've got home funds that were awarded last year from the county. The BHA has sort of committed to project-based vouchers. They encourage us to apply, which is what we are trying to build here is right in the wheelhouse for vouchers, so we assume that we'll get those when the project is ready. And then also some Second Step equity. So I'm proposing to put some of these dollars in as well. And those are my slides. Time for questions.
So I pulled up the house that's currently there.
Yep.
It's going away.
We're actually going to leave it on the property. It's been rehabbed.
That, well, maybe that's not a most recent picture. It too seems to be in Vancouver.
Yep.
As the previous person, I'll ask you the same question.
Sure.
There's 5 of us who live north of Highway 500, about 10 blocks south of Highway 500.
Yep.
Why? Why should the people in Battleground and Center Ridgefield?
Sure.
Why should we do this?
Well, I would say that the value to the county, the value to the world, is that home.
homeless families with children will have stable houses. These are 8 new units. They don't exist right now.
And you have 105. How many of them are in the county or in the 5 cities north of?
We don't have any. They're all in the city.
They're all in the city. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm happy to partner with you if you want to.
Come see us. We'd love to have you.
Okay.
But it's just my question is this is for county, if I understand it properly. And I understand Vancouver is in the county, but the city of Vancouver also has the funds.
That's right.
So when there are projects in the city of Vancouver, the city of Vancouver has to put money in it as well. And we only fund it proportional to the population that's outside the city limits that's going to, just so you guys know, doesn't mean that you have to fund it or encouraging you to fund it. I mean, if you have concerns, you want fewer projects inside city limits, that's completely your call and it's appropriately your call. But, you know, just a reminder that if it's within the city of Vancouver limits, if the city has not put funds to it, we don't put funds to it. Even if you're like, yeah, we want to fund it, and the city like ends up they don't fund it, we're like, you know, that's not how we do funding. And we only fund it to the extent that if 53% of the population that facility is going to serve is citizens that are originally from outside of Clark County, outside of the city limits, we'll fund it to 53% of the total ask. You know, so that's generally how we do it.
How many people are you housing right now?
About 205.
205. And this would increase it by 8 families.
Right.
We have 105 units now.
Now I have to think that people in our areas, in our cities, if there isn't an area in our city, they're going to go to you.
Yes.
For sure.
Because we don't have it. So I look at it that way too. And isn't Vancouver putting 100,000 into this?
I've asked for that. I'm
okay.
Using,
we don't know yet,
probably 800,000 of the
we
city's
have almost
affordable
no
housing funds in this project. So
okay.
The answer is yes.
Okay.
You have received money from Vancouver before.
Mm-hmm.
And to what extent, percentage wise?
Hard to say. Like I said, they gave us $500,000 through affordable housing funds this last year. I'm going to put 400 of that into this project. I've asked for another 100 in city home funds, so they'll be into it at least as much as the county for sure.
And I don't have the computer genius that one of our counselors had, but where is it on Neal's Lane?
2705, so it's just north of 4th Lane, a couple blocks.
It's
north of 4th Lane.
It's between 4th Lane and Highway.
Okay, because the south side seems to have their own problems. I'm assuming that the north side does too, but not as to the extent that the south side does. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Sorry about that phone ringing. Thank you for your flexibility.
Whose was it?
I'm sure it was Mercy Housing calling in.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Okay.
Because it was right at night.
In terms of qualifications, I worked for an affordable housing developer, and I also worked for a tax credit syndicator. So before you asked about low-income housing, I'm here to discuss the 70-unit affordable housing project being sponsored by Mercy Housing Northwest, and they're in partnership with Peace Health Systems. Peace Health is actually going to contribute the land for this project as well as a substantive monetary contribution to the overall project. Total cost of the project based on their pro forma development budget was just over $22 million. Peace Health will contribute outside of the land a little over 10% of that. Mercy Housing Northwest has been in the Northwest and Washington State for a couple of decades and are a very experienced affordable housing developer. I think Mercy Housing overall is developed and oversees well in excess of 20,000 units nationwide. And I think about 10% of that roughly is in the state of Washington. So very experienced sponsors. They know their way around these affordable housing projects, and they have, again, are going to work with Peace Health, which is great. I'm sure we're all familiar with them as a local sponsor for this project. Their request is for $250,000 of home funds from Clark County. Previously, they were awarded $200,000 in home funds from the city, another $250,000 in home funds they're requesting from the city this year. They've also been awarded, committed $500,000 from the Affordable Housing Fund for the city of Vancouver. And as I mentioned, Peace Health has committed both the land and just over $2 million towards this project. The other pieces of the capital stack for this are going to be low-income housing tax credits, so there's going to be a 9% award. I'll let OE describe sort of the timeline for that, but between that and some housing trust money and a small permanent loan and a little bit of deferred fee, that's what really is going to end up funding these 70 units. One thing that I would say that from this project that's nice, the project itself is just east of the Peace Health campus off 93rd. So it's a really nice site in a mature, you know, single-family area. There's parks and schools nearby, as well as shopping and retail, which you like to see. And there's also a bus station adjacent to the Peace Health campus that residents can walk to if they don't have their own transportation. But this project is nice in that there's going to be 13 project-based vouchers, which help the overall cash flow of the project and allows them to do two things. Number one, the set-asides are 50% or less AMI rents, which is quite low for a project. Typically, you'll see up to 60% AMI rents or higher. But because of those vouchers, they're able to do 50% and below. And the other thing that they're able to do is provide a full-time resident service coordinator. Now, these are various activities for residents that are free of charge, and they're elective, so they're not required to do any of these. But it is a nice element, and because of the vouchers, they're able to fund that, which you don't see in a lot of these projects. So it's really a nice attribute of the project overall. You know, overall, I think that looking at their operating pro forma, again, mentioning the servicing, which I think Mercy, and we can probably comment on this as well, Mercy does a nice job of tracking. So a lot of nonprofits don't track services and who uses them, and then sort of adjust those to the resident population. Mercy makes a habit of doing that, which I think is also a nice element. As you can see, I don't have a lot of negative things to say about the project. I'm not sure how to address, you know, because this is inside
of 500.
But what I would say is that, you know, going forward in the future, I think the reason a lot of these tend to be closer to the city, this is not all conjecture, this is just from decades of doing this myself, is, you know, you have to have some of these residents, and there's 20% set aside for large families and 20% set aside for disabled residents, or at least a member of the household that's disabled for this particular project. They need to be close to the services. So in this case, having Peace Health there, downtown here in the city is where a lot of the services that folks that are on the cusp of homelessness or struggling to make ends meet get their services, so it would be great to find places out in the county to do that. That would help breed and I think foster a lot more affordable housing. Just one man's opinion, so take that for what it's worth. Otherwise, I think this project is solid. You've got great sponsors behind it, and I think if they can pull all of their I will do, by the way, I've written this up and given a draft to Sam and Michael, but you'll get a full report analysis from me in the spreadsheet to take a look at those stuff. Does anybody have
questions
now?
Is this a...
I'd just like to say thank you, Fred. That was a very good summary of the project. I think you covered all of the major phases there. But I leave that as a question.
I'm sorry.
I have a couple questions. One, it's a 70 unit, it's one building?
No, it'll be, sorry, it's in my report, but it'll be six separate buildings that will be designed to accommodate, as I mentioned, there'll be 20% of the units that are disabled, so there'll be four, let me think about this. They're designated for disabled. Go ahead, Obi.
Yeah, like I said, it would be six buildings, each one with 10 to 12 units, and the mix of 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms. So I believe it was about 15 3-bedrooms, but about 26 or so 2-bedrooms, and the balance are 1-bedroom.
That's 2-story, 3-story?
3-story.
There will also be ample parking there, about 1.5, I think, Obi, per unit.
Yeah.
So that's a very well parked. That's a very well parked site.
I'm trying to think about a 93rd.
Just north of Mill Plain.
It's north of Mill Plain.
Just
the 93rd, and is there? I can't think of a park nearby. Is there space for a 70 unit, potentially 120 kids, whatever, or more?
Is there actually a park nearby, I think about half a mile or less away, just to the west of the high school there, the Henrietta Lacks High School?
Just to the left?
West.
Oh, the west, okay.
And we do plan to provide space on site for a playground or something to that effect, either a garden or a playground or some kind of open space for residents to benefit from.
It's a nice.
And along with that, which I don't think Fred mentioned, there will be a community room on the ground floor of one of the buildings, adjacent to the playground area. That's where the resident services will be provided for residents, and that space will open, and the space and the resident services then will be open as much as we are able to the local community as well.
Knowing a little bit about that neighborhood, that's a 1940s, 1950s neighborhood, all single ranches. So you're putting in, or hoping to put in, a 3-story, all brand new buildings in the middle of 1940s ranches. The neighbors?
I'll let Obi speak to that, but I know they've had a number of neighborhood meetings to discuss it. I think Obi wasn't the main concern, frankly, from the neighbors, just in terms of traffic.
Yeah, actually, we had a neighborhood meeting on June 6th. I think I can't say off the top of my head what the turnout was. I think there were about 60 members in the community. And I gave a presentation that was to a similar level of detail to what Fred provided, and we gave some very early schematics of what it might look like based on other similar properties that we've developed and that MWA, the architect, has designed. And there wasn't really any feedback on the scale or the height of the building, but I think people appreciated that we didn't propose to do a large structure or a structure that would take up the whole street front. But yeah, most of the questions were around the potential population living in the building and around parking that would be provided.
Other questions? Is Mercy a partner of Peace Health, or is it separate and has support from Peace Health?
Yeah, we are separate, but we do have a long-standing relationship with Peace Health. A of those clients also found it Peak Health. So we've got a long organizational connection there, but they actually have worked with us on a different property, several other properties in some of them, so one of which was recently constructed in 2016, where they rent print space and provide other services to the residents. So they wanted to, as part of their mission, find a way to connect with patients and help people in the form of housing. But they know that they're not having the better, so they reached out to Mercy Housing, which is, like I said, a long-standing connection. So that's kind of how that came to be. So Keith also was providing the land and some capital for the construction of the building, but Mercy will own it and rent it and manage it long-term.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do I have to stay on the line or do I have
to... Oh, we'll talk to you later. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Before we go to the question and answers with TBRA, a couple of you have asked me to remind you how much is available in each category. And for infrastructure, is $550,000 that's made available. Public facilities, $300,000. So, you know, public facilities and infrastructure, you know, totals, like, you know, $850,000. Asset and economic development, $350,000 is what's available. And for housing, $800,000. And within TBRA, we're limiting that to $350,000. That's part of housing. So out of that $800,000, $350,000 is what we're limiting TBRA to. And you can also see that in a neighborhood in your story.
So just to clarify on that, so the blue one at the top where there's two projects, there's $300,000 for that.
And we're not doing, you know, this is a reminder, like, this is question and answer only for the TBRA project. So we're starting with 5 minutes of Q&A. If you have, if you have questions for Janice Youth's tenant-based rental assistance program, so this is rental assistance in rehousing. And, does anyone have questions for Janice Youth, TBRA?
Nice to see you guys again. Yeah. What have you done in the last year since we saw you?
Well, we've housed 16 households. They're all currently housed. So out of those 16, I guess one household went back to homelessness, and that was because of a behavioral health issue that we were having.
One out of 16?
Yeah.
How many households, how many people?
Oh, there's a lot of people. I don't know, it's 40-something, I think, just because there's a lot of children. So, youth with kids.
Yeah, so we're the only organization in the county and region that actually works specifically with homeless youth. And a lot of times we'll say we're housing so many homeless youth, but actually people don't realize many of them have small children, sometimes two or three under age five easily. So we're housing households of kids that are incredibly vulnerable.
Do you recall how much money you got last year?
120.
Every dime,
case management, 100 for rentals.
Every dime.
$7.
And just as a clarification, when you say 16 households rehouse, are you talking about have exited the program successfully, or are you talking about we're rehousing, rapid rehousing?
I'm not sure about how many exited.
Okay,
totally. So we helped 16 households last year.
Gotcha.
And this is the only program like this for youth. And youth need individualized case management, and they need more service just because they've never been through this before. A lot of youth don't know what to say to a landlord. house, overcoming barriers, and keeping them sustained in housing.
We have long-term through all of our programs over an 80 to 85% success rate of sustaining that housing. And we're working with, in some of those programs, the highest risk populations of mental health, disability, and things that are in itself. Federal reviewers have told us we're about 20% above the national average of our outcome rates for the youth that we work with last time they came through.
And Janus also has an outreach program that goes above 500, and that's how we reach those people up there, let them know about the Housing Solution Center, so help.
Yeah, we have mobile outreach that goes throughout the county, and actually because of the work that we did with you all a few years ago, we got invited. We're up in Cowlitz County now doing the same thing. So from here till Tacoma, we're the only people in the region that are sending people out mobily into rural areas, into towns, into cities, wherever they are, we go find the kids and try and get them into a service.
Mike just mentioned there's $350,000 available. If it comes down to the wisdom of Solomon, we have to split the baby. Are you willing to be part of the split baby?
Definitely.
It's 120 or nothing, or it's, by golly, we'll take 70 grand and thank you.
Exactly.
I would say in terms of a return on investment, I've done calculations for the annual report, but we just got the latest federal calculation that shows for every homeless youth that you prevent going into adult homelessness, long-term to the community is $3.1 million of savings. So if we don't have enough money to spend, which we never do, when you want to generate more money, well, actually your biggest direct impact on long-term funding for these programs is keep getting those kids off the street, because that's over $3 million return in lifetime savings of services that they're going to use otherwise.
And I should say, when we first requested this funds back in 2016, we did it because we have a drop-in center that we were watching homeless youth come to the drop-in center and then graduate into the adult homeless system before we could help them. And these funds were dedicated to helping those youth that were at the drop-in center so we could catch them before they entered the adult system, and now it's working. And those youth are coming back and helping other youth get off the streets, and they're referring them to the program and working through the system. Because a lot of what working with homeless youth about is developing trust with adults, because they have a lack of trust towards adults. So when the homeless youth come to the other homeless youth and say, hey, Janus is a program that you can work with and you can trust them, it helps them initiate that relationship.
But we literally see fewer of these high risk, we call it the very high risk youth, fewer of them in the drop-in center since the program started, which is pretty amazing. Well, it's really amazing, actually.
Say that again. So.
Okay. We have a drop-in center where the youth can
right.
come and get services. And we saw part of the reason this program got started is because we saw a group of youth who were extremely high need. They needed extra level of support and the rent subsidy and stuff. The program got started. We're seeing fewer of those youth in that center because they're getting housed, basically, that the program is working to divert them into, and again, this is the return on investment. And then, as Scott is saying, some of those youth are then coming back and mentoring other youth who are still on the streets and helping them get off of the street because the program has meant so much to them. So it's really an amazing, and that, none of that was planned. This is just what happens.
Side effect.
Side effect.
And there's always going to be homeless youth just because of family dynamics and relationships. Youth are going to be on the street rather than be abused in their homes. So having other youth that can help foster that relationship and catch those youth before they become street entrenched or graduate into the adult system is paramount to them getting off the streets as quickly as possible.
With this, the $120,000 requirement, what do you project or your goal is for number of households to be assisted?
20 households.
Okay.
We try to do real short term, 3 to 6 months maximum, hopefully. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. But we just try to get them housed, get an income, and get them self-sufficient.
Now, as we become more and more aware of homelessness, even in our small cities, we don't see the homeless in the adult side as much as we see, I'm pretty sure Battleground and Richfield, we see it in what they label as homelessness for children, not children, but youth.
Yeah.
More than we do in adults. So that's where I see it, and I didn't think we had any homeless in Richfield. We had two, one went to Kelso and one went to Olympia, and we were aware of that, but then I found out that we had small program where we're trying to get them into foster homes or people that will take care of them. So.
Yeah, a lot of the youth that are homeless don't trust adults, so they stay out of the system, so you don't know to count them, and our outreach team connects with them.
Yeah.
That's how we get to count. Yeah, otherwise, they won't check in with the Housing Solutions Center. We won't know they're homeless.
For everyone's awareness, we're at the 5 minute mark for asking questions.
Okay, no questions.
I would just say, in terms of your comment, when we first came to Vancouver in 1995, we're operators in Portland and have done this for 20 years down there. And actually, the first thing that happened is we started talking to people in Vancouver, as they said, we don't have any homeless youth in Vancouver. And I said, well, where are all these kids coming from that we're finding on the street? And they said, well, they're coming from Portland. When we went up to Cowlitz County 3 years ago, they told me that they don't have any kids on the street there. We found 374 kids under 18 within the first 3 months of outreach. And I said, where are these kids coming from? They said they're coming from Vancouver. So there's this piece of, particularly in the smaller regions, it's hard. And I tell people, we don't have a homeless youth issue in America, in Clark County and Vancouver. We have a familyless child issue. And these kids deserve a chance to get off of the street. And if you don't give it to them, then it's a life sentence.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now we're entering 5 minutes question and answer, not a presentation, just question and answer to Lifeline Connections on their PBRA proposal. So again, this is rapid rehousing rental assistance for persons experiencing homelessness.
We're going to house 15 households that are currently homeless.
The hardest to serve finance, most likely, and make sure that they're still in housing in the program.
And did you receive money from this outfit last year?
Correct.
And how much was that?
$50,000.
It's gone? Every dime spent?
Unfortunately not. So the program, so Lifeline is fairly new to housing, so they were just building the program. And so in building the program, unfortunately, it took time to hire staff, to acquire to the clients, and then to kind of build the program and learn how to do it. So, and in this process, they also hired myself, who has quite a bit of experience and 10 years of experience in doing this kind of housing. Unfortunately, they just hired me last month. So they've kind of been doing this without a lot of prior knowledge. So. But I anticipate moving forward, there's going to be a lot more success and a lot that's going to thrive.
Technically, last year's funding was re-granted by the county back, so it's been reused within the system. It's not money that we are sitting on.
No, I appreciate that.
Okay.
But you asked for $50,000. Did you give it all back?
Yes, last year we did, because we had the previous year's money, this is our third request. The first year's money we've been spending now. So because we were delayed in getting contracts and because of the tight housing or employment market, we were delayed getting staff. It took longer to get the program going. Now it's really flowing. We've got how many clients right now?
So right now we have 8 clients, 4 already housed within the last month. So, I mean, we're getting them housed really quickly now that we have them, and the program's up and running. So, and then we have 4 who are searching.
And another, 18 to 20 that we have housed but not using these funds.
Yeah, so we have a lot of experience housing people without subsidies, too. So we have another 18 last year that on a different program that we managed to house.
So out of the 100,000 from year before last, how much are you still have?
The year before last, I don't think we had that much. The year before last, we started with 36.
No, it was 50.
Okay. you're right, it was 50.
So that's how much you have left right now, in terms that you're using to rehouse?
You know
from the what we extended.
So what you extended, we were probably a good 3/4 of it. We were hoping to, we just brought on the people with the 50,000 that we had left over. And so so we would like to extend their to stay on the program for another 3 to 6 months. We do not have another pot of money this year to use to manage them. So if we bring too many people on too quickly, then they'll be off the program too quickly. So we're trying to budget that out so they can be successful.
Seeing no other, let me ask one more then. Asking the previous people, there's 300 and a half there. If it comes down to splitting it between the three of you, is $62,000 worth your, you'll take whatever comes your way?
Absolutely.
What's unique about your clients?
About our program?
Your tenants with behavioral health issues. So you're looking, you have a niche.
We focus on folks who are particularly hard to house because of the complexities of substance use and mental health disorders. They don't communicate well with landlords. They don't know going in some of the skills about how to stay housed that other folks do. And so we do provide that level of additional professional behavioral health treatment and support for them if warranted. It's not a requirement, but it is the added, you know, the value add that we have.
Lifeline has a huge, encompasses a lot of different programs that around behavioral health and employment services. They have mental health, they have substance abuse treatment services. They have a huge array of services that we provide. And then we also have other funding, FCS funding, AmeriCorps insurance that helps pay for case management services, so we can provide more intensive case management services. We can see them quite a bit. Quite often to help them, several times a week if needed, just to help them become self-sufficient.
We've also discovered in the last few weeks, we went back and looked, 71% of the folks, of all those 18 and current 10, have either been patients at Lifeline before or are current patients now. So we know the behavioral health disorders are an exponential piece of what's going on for these folks.
Yeah, we're already serving our clients when they get referred from the Housing Solutions Center. It's a coordinated entry system where they're on a priority pool, so we don't have to choose who comes. But regardless of that, still 71% of those people are currently still clients of ours. So.
Are any of the clients that you house able to hold any type of a job whatsoever? And what percentage of them are about?
I would say at least 60 to 70%. I mean, there's different levels of employment that one could do. Even if you're receiving Social Security, you can do. We can refer them to DVR, and they can get part-time work to help them sustain. So, the majority of the people can at some point. And if they're not able to, then we help them. We help them find housing that they could stay in without the additional employment. So, we try to be creative in that.
And we also have supported employment staff, and often our patients are in both programs at once to help the supported employment find them employment as well as housing find them housing.
And for your awareness, we're at the 5 minute point for questions and answers.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And as for 5 minutes of question and answer, we have Cher.
So last year with home county funds, 93% of the people who exited to permanent housing, and 85% of the people that we served had not returned to homelessness in the past 2 years. So we're good stewards of money. We certainly had some issues with the day center. We've been around for 40 years and have experienced a lot of success in housing people, in operating shelters, in operating supportive housing programs, and in serving people who are hard to serve.
You, and then again, you're asking for roughly 80% of the money that's available. Are you willing to take 100 grand?
If we need to take less, we would be happy to take less and serve.
And then I have one more question, again, asking as I have everyone. Last year, you received how much money?
Between the CDBG and the home, 300,000.
300,000. Is it all spent?
Yes.
I'll throw out, historically with the share, and this is not an endorsement of Share's DBRA or anything, just for your information, historically, when other TBRA programs are underspent and are in return money and we need to spend out, we have asked Share, with UCPB's knowledge, to increase their contract, and they have successfully spent out the TBRA dollars for the community.
Other questions?
How many households do you plan on serving with this?
31. And so, like with any funding, like they put 30% of their income towards the rent, so we could serve more if people earn more money, and we could serve less if they're struggling.
I'm deferring to our council member.
Got your questions. Good job. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is not an endorsement of Share at all, but because I'm sharing this because there has been so much press around the Navigation Center. We've been involved in the county more as witnesses to what's been going on with the Navigation Center. The county puts in about $200,000 a year in operations towards that. And what I will share is that it has been a mess. And it's been a mess of the City of Vancouver's creation. It's their building. They've made the rules of every step of the way. I think that it's an indicator, when they've hired a homeless resource manager, and he leaves within 6 months of what a mess it has been. So just bear that in mind as you look through the different proposals. For what it's worth, with our contract with the county, Share has met the contract requirements and has, in terms of performance measures, objectives, spending out, stuff like that. So that's not to tell you to decide to fund them. It's just there's been a lot of press and
don't believe everything you read in the newspaper.
Well, I think what's been in the newspaper, it's been in there for a reason. I'm not going to defend what's going on in the Navigation Center and tell you don't believe it. But what I will say is, when it has come time to put a face to the Navigation Center, Share has been put in the position to be that face, even though most of the funding for operations, most of the contract around operations has really not been something that they control, So just for what it is, for what it is,
So their bread and butter has been the shelter and the TABOR program, ventured into this day center dynamic, and then there's all the mess that you described.
Yeah.
So they've been doing the tea room and the shelter for a long time, right? Never any issues in the tea room with the county?
No, not that I can think of.
But the day center's had its challenges, and
it was the first go for the city of Vancouver, too.
Right.
So, yeah.
So I guess the question is, do the issues at the day center reflect upon the efficacy of share in their bread and butter that they've been doing for several decades?
I've managed their TUBER contract for the last few years, and I have not had any concerns with them meeting or exceeding the expectations of their contract.
But again, that's not saying you fund as you see fit. I think it's important to have that conversation just because the circumstances around the day center and the conversation around the community, you know, that has been driven by the day center and the fact that Sheriff is, honestly, there's been a lot of bad press. And just for your awareness, most of the homeless crisis response system public funds that go into this community come from the county. You know, so most of Sheriff's contracts are with the county, and we've not had any issues with them around that. But anyway.
Okay.
It's not on. If you would like it on, I can turn it on.
Yes. Good morning. Oh, wow. That'll wake you up. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you. Maybe I'm going to just put it down a little bit so we don't blow them out. How's that? That better? Okay. Just want to make sure you can all hear me. So, again, thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. I know you have a tight schedule, so I'll move on. So, this way? Okay, so we've been around since 1994. Since 1994, we have served Southwest Washington as well as all of Oregon. I just wanted to point out that our mission is to support the economic advancement of Latinos in Oregon and Southwest Washington. That's been our mission statement for over 25 years. And again, we've served Southwest Washington for over 25 years. We do have three members of our board that are from Southwest Washington. The one on your left is a local construction person. She works in both Oregon and Washington. The second, that's Elizabeth Gomez with Bridge City Contracting. The second is Monica Fowler with CTRAN. She's the CFO. And then the last is Alex Ortega. He works for Bank of America. So our approach is pretty comprehensive. Our largest service is technical assistance to small businesses. We help them either start or expand. Now, as you know, with this contract, we're serving very low-income individuals. So these are people who are basically in a survival mode. Over 50% of whom we serve are women head of households. We're trying to support themselves and their families. So this is survival. This is very, very important work that we're doing. Again, we're trying to prevent homelessness. We're trying to prevent poverty increase their opportunity to move up economically. The second thing that we do are scholarships. We're trying to help students enter the workforce at a higher level. We support them whether in community college entrance and continuation or four-year higher education. And then leadership development. The third part is those who are already in the workforce can help them support their advancement, and so that, again, we're trying to create long-term wealth. So again, why do we do this? To increase income for small businesses, help them create jobs, help them on the path towards long-term wealth creation. Students, the same thing, and leadership's the same thing. We have given over $2.5 million in scholarships, and many of those have been in Southwest Washington. Our board members in Southwest Washington donate, and then they specify that they want those scholarships to go to Southwest Washington students. So we've had this contract since 2018, so just a few years. Even though we have over 18 years of experience providing technical assistance, again, primarily to low-income individuals, we have similar contracts in Portland. So what do we do with this contract? We do outreach, and then after we do the outreach, we do an assessment of where are they in their process. Are they a startup? Do they already have a business? Help them with market research, planning, financial planning, marketing. We do classes and we help them navigate the system and access resources. I want to point out that we do not charge for any of our services. We do not charge them to apply for any loans, apply for any fees, apply for anything. This is an example of one of the businesses that we helped in Battleground. I've been told I have 1 minute, so I'm moving faster. A photography business that we've also assisted. And then we wanted to highlight some of our partners that we work with here in Clark County. Give you a chance to go through that. And just a project summary. We're asking for $73,200 for staffing, and that we would serve 50 clients. This is Peace Health. They're one of our members. They're also one of our scholarship contributors. And then this is some of our clients. So with that, I want to open up for questions.
So the money that you're requesting is for staffing only, not for scholarships, not for money into jobs or anything. It's just for your staffing support because you don't charge for services.
That's correct. This is only the money they're asking for is only for the CDBG activities.
Okay. And how much did you receive last year?
$61,000.
And it's all been spent on
yes.
staffing.
Yes.
Well, that was only for staffing as well, correct?
That's correct. All of these contracts only provide for staffing. They
okay.
don't provide any admin, any supplies, any insurance.
And how many staff is that for, the 73,000?
It's for 1.4, which is a full, I'm sorry, I was going to invite and introduce our staff. Gigi, can you please stand? And then also Nicholas. So these are our two bilingual bicultural staff people. They represent one full FTE working here in Clark County. And then we have another person who provides the intake. She does the, takes the calls, makes sure that they're in the county geographically, and then also takes the enrollment information from them for the staff.
So 1.4 FTE
yes.
for 73.
You may have mentioned it in the presentation, but how many clients did you serve last year?
50.
Same number.
Out of Southwest Washington.
That's correct.
And
we have a contract, just to clarify, we have a contract with the city of Vancouver, so they have to be within that city limits. And then we have had a contract with Clark County, so we have to make sure that they're outside of the city limits. So we're very careful about that because we know that that's a concern.
And you have an office here?
Yes, we have an office here in Southwest Broadway, on Broadway. It's a small office, but it does the job.
Anything else? Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Human Mercy Corps?
Yes.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lynn Rankin. I'm the Executive Director of Mercy Corps Northwest.
I'm here with my colleague, Lee McLevin, who is our women's business manager and also handles education for small businesses. Mercy Corps Northwest is the domestic arm of the organization Mercy Corps that's based in Portland. We work in Oregon and Washington and have done so for the last 20 years. We have a 20-person team that's spread between our Portland office, our Seattle office, and also our office in Walla Walla. So we build more just, productive, and resilient communities in Oregon and Washington. Every year we support around 1,000 small businesses and improve services of 30 local nonprofits in the area. We've put millions of dollars into the hands of the community and have supported 15,000 clients locally. So this is a little snapshot of the clients we serve and where they're located. Basically, we work from the California to the Canadian border. We see heavy concentrations of clients where we have offices and people on the ground for outreach. You can see on that that we do serve people in Clark County, but it's not as robust as it would be in and around Portland. And what we find is, we're here today to talk to you about getting more intentional about serving clients in Clark County and to increase that density in Clark County and the local services that we provide here. Our program overview is about 80% of the work we do, the clients we have are around our small business program. We also work with incarcerated people inside of prison in Oregon. We support local nonprofits and community building and also work around disaster readiness. About 70% of people that we serve are women and people of color. And a little bit about our business services is, we provide financing, which means loans and grants. We're an alternative lender, which means that anyone who cannot get a loan at a financial institution or a credit union can come to us. We lend for small business purposes only, and currently we have a 2% default rate. Our business IDAs or grants serve federally classified low-income families and communities to help them start or grow their business. Education-wise, we provide fee-based, multi-session classes, also seminars and workshops, and one-to-one counseling with industry leaders. We operate the only women's business center in the state of Oregon, which is based out of our office in Portland. We have no preset journey for how we work with clients. It's demand-based. Client can come in, talk to us about technical assistance or receiving a loan. It's up to them what services they want from Mercy Corps. And we also have experience working with cities and counties to increase their inclusive growth and business development services. And last couple of slides for me is a little bit about our 20-year impact, number of clients we've served, 11.3 million in loans and grants, and then over 2,200 businesses supported. And some of our metrics, 92% of clients who walk through our doors return for additional services, 96% of businesses are still in business 18 months later, and we increase people's credit scores by 40% on average. And I hand it over to Lee.
I'm going to share with you a little bit about the project that we've proposed for Clark County. Our goals are to help entrepreneurs succeed by building their knowledge, building their skills, and providing them with the capital that they need to get their business started and grow it. We want to help produce more financially resilient households and communities in Clark County, and we want to grow relationships with communities and form a foundation for ongoing support where we can grow our services. Lynn talked a little bit about our approach, and I think we're running a bit behind, but I do want to say that one of our strengths is Mercy Corps' ability to leverage private sector investment, expertise, and volunteerism. This is something that we excel at all over the world, and particularly in the metropolitan area here. share a little bit about how we would use the CDBG funds that we're discussing today. The majority of the $50,000 that we're asking you for would be used to deliver our program. You can see that what we're funding here is a proposed half-time person to be in Clark County and in Vancouver over the next year. But in addition to that, this would fund support from our Portland-based office for intakes, for getting people registered for classes, and for providing underwriting support for loans. I want to share with you what our commitments are if we were to receive these funds. We are committed to bringing a staff of one half-time person with an intent to grow over the next year. We see this as a starting place. We commit to serve 25 entrepreneurs, the majority of which would be earning less than 60% of area median income. We commit to provide at least 27 hours of business education opportunities per participant. We will bring with us $200,000 of loan capital that would be accessible to entrepreneurs that we serve. And I want to tell you as well that we have a focus on really building connections with our community, so making our office hours and classroom locations accessible to people, and create programming that's responsive to the cultural needs of the community here. I know that the Hispanic Chamber has particular strength in working with the Latinx community. That is not necessarily our area where we see potential for growth for our own strengths of our organization. We serve a lot of Russian-speaking and Arabic-speaking entrepreneurs. So what we propose to do with funds is provide a lot of business education opportunities to get early-stage entrepreneurs involved in our programming. We're going to offer a business foundations class that's 18 hours of programming twice over the course of the year. In addition to that, work on building our participants' credit scores through our Master Your Credit workshops and provide them with opportunities to learn about how to access capital. In addition to those classes, we provide one-on-one counseling and technical assistance opportunities, and that includes the opportunity to meet with volunteer attorneys, CPAs, record keepers, people who can help get that business started off right. I'm going to just briefly touch on the financing that we bring to our small business development participants here.
So we're about to just have 2 minutes left for questions.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
You go on because I think you're answering a lot of what you'd be asked, but okay. I want to give the UCPB a chance to ask questions that they may have. So do you have any questions regarding VersaCore's proposal?
Thanks, I appreciate that. And I missed your time too.
I showed it earlier.
This is your first foray into Clark County?
It is.
So this is your first time asking any money from Clark County?
Yes, as a public agency, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying you're asking for $50,000 for a part-time person to come in to basically solicit throughout Clark County people who need help, yet you're going to bring $200,000 to the table from the Portland area to be able to help these new businesses? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, I mean, I think we work in Oregon and Washington, and so we have $200,000 that we're willing to leverage for loans specifically. We have a loan
in
fund.
In Clark County, based on the $50,000 that we did before part-time employees soliciting the community help.
Correct. We bring that to the table and assume the risk for that.
That we will measure during our first year of engagement with Clark County. We will look closely at economic growth and be able to report on that. We'll look at individual financial resilience metrics as measured through credit score improvements and increases in household income. And we'll be very intentional about measuring community participation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Council, any more questions? If it
inside?
Zero with our money inside the city limits.
What's the waiting list?
What was the last?
In their application, they said that they have 24 households that are on the Clark County wait list, and half of those are mortgage ready and just waiting to purchase a home.
And is this where they own the home? They own the home. Mm-hmm. Proud Ground owns the home, and then they have to sell it back. Or the
Proud Ground buys out the land.
Buys the land. Parcel,
and then the home family owns the house.
But they have to resell. They sell it. They have to resell it at a reduced cost for the next person to buy in. Right. Okay.
At a reduced cost.
Yeah, they don't sell it at the full market value. So the next person who buys the house gets to buy it at a reduced cost of not the full appraised value. So
because
when
the
they
land is
so
still
the investment,
owned by
yeah.
the ground always.
The
right.
investment stays there.
To get the next
it's
for the next
affordable.
People.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all coming back.
Here it is. Yes. So the average sales price for without Proud Ground is $344,000 in the county, and then with Proud Ground, they usually put an investment of $80,000 to $100,000 per home, so that the families can afford the mortgage of roughly $189,000. So these are the types of households that are likely to be served by Proud Ground. And shows there that 57% of is the AMI, area median income. They said the average of all of their households is for their median income is 65%. They can go up to 80%. So they're serving even deeper subsidy than they could. They're asking for $300,000. The home buyers bring to the table through their mortgage, $526,000. This shows, like I said, about $100,000 per home goes in that pays for Proud Ground's education, marketing. They do a lot of work with the home buyers to make sure that they're ready to maintain a home. So, this shows how they how it remains permanently affordable, how the home value increases, and the family does get a portion of the equity when they move, and a portion of it stays with the property so that it's affordable even to the next home buyer without any additional subsidy on our part, which is the important piece. There we go. It's a cute family that lives in Clark County now. Proud Ground has received funding for us. They can do CDBG or home funding, which is nice. They can do the flexible funding, though. They can do a minimum of $100,000 to help one household. They're asking for $300,000 to help three households. We haven't had any issues as far as billing, reporting, all of our monitoring. So.
I'm assuming if we ended up with $100,000, they would likely take it.
Yes.
But $150,000. Doesn't work. It looks like they kind of need increments of $100,000 to do each unit.
Yeah, they might. I mean, I think they could do 80 maybe as the lowest amount for a homeowner, but with our real estate market, they need more and more money to make it affordable.
Do you know by any chance? I know that they buy the ground. Is it typical that they go out and buy a house? If you know the summer film. That's already constructed, and they figure the land value is $70,000, the house value is $200,000. So that's how they do it. Or do they actually go out and buy the land and build the house and then start that way? It's actually to buy the house and figure out what they'll, based on the county,
well, and
the county assessor value.
And it's actually a household. They go shopping for the house with the household.
I didn't know that. Okay, that's good.
So
and their limit for the,
we put a cap on the value of the home. They can only find a home that's $321,000 or less.
Oh, okay.
And so they have to meet all the inspection requirements. They can't buy a shabby house and rehab it.
And then
it.
Have to rehab it. So it has to be move-in ready, turnkey, ready to go. Okay, good to know. Thank you.
Would you say again what you just said on the house, on the household?
So they don't pre-buy the houses, and then, you know, they don't have a house inventory that the home buyers can shop from. They shop with the home buyer, and they're making the purchase decision.
Who already is pre-approved in a loan.
Correct.
On a mortgage.
Correct.
And what if they trash the house?
Well, they own it. You know, so I mean,
they won't have any equity.
Yeah, they would lose out on their equity.
Or they just move out.
Well, I think their foreclosure default rate is like almost non-existent. Mm-hmm. So that has not been a problem yet.
Right.
To this point, they've had enough.
I think that question came up once before.
Thing about Life Months, I thought it was unclear during their presentation. We awarded them the $50,000 in 2018. Their contract year was from January 1st, 2019 to December 31st, 2019. During that time, they spent zero out of $50,000. And so we extended that contract to go through December 2020. And they are now starting to spend, they haven't submitted an invoice yet, but they said they have tenants in housing now and expect an invoice on that money that was awarded.
Thank you. That's important.
That was on
Lifeline Connection.
Can I ask a follow-up on that?
Please.
So it sounds like that organization got a little in front of themselves on moving into the housing space.
I think so.
They do good work and all this other stuff. But it's the gentleman that was sitting there, I recognized him from somewhere.
He used to work for Cher.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Okay. So
he brings the experience to the table.
Well, that's why they hired him.
Yeah.
Because they were not spending out.
Yeah. So it feels like maybe they're poised to start to be able to leverage these dollars. If we don't give them any money, it goes to one of the other teams. The Housing Solutions Center, we're going to spend all our cheaper money. And people are going to get tenant-based rental assistance. It's just going to be who is doing it. This diversifies that, but they have this niche. Will those people be less served if they don't get any money?
So I don't. That's a hard question because there's a good portion of those that are being served by Janus Youth, those that are being served by Sher that do have a co-occurring substance use disorder, and they are receiving some treatment, through that. Lifeline does have more expertise in, specifically in the behavioral health substance use disorder area. So the reality is Lifeline is just getting started in this area in housing. So I don't think that it's as much that population wouldn't get served, but because that rental assistance will be going out to the community, but they might be getting served better and with more of a substance use disorder focus. I don't know if that's an adequate answer to your question.
I don't know. Yeah. Is this an appropriate time, Jared, to ask a question about this morning?
Sure.
Before we move on to the next thing. I just had a general question. Our practice, in all the years that I've been doing this, our practice is, the spreadsheet goes up, they get a numeric score, and then we just slop it off, right there. And we haven't done a lot of, took a little bit off of that number one person there, and then we could, fund more. We haven't done that in the past. It just hasn't been our practice. It's certainly easy to just go, look, you get it all. So, for example, on asset and economic development, at least in my opinion, Crowd Ground, they do a great job, right? The private housing, they score pretty well.
only have 50,000 left. If they get the highest score, and they're taking 300, 350th, whatever that percentage is, it doesn't give us a lot of room to wiggle around with the business assistance. I'm just saying that's a hypothetical scenario. I just offer it to the group, and we may want to start thinking about doing it a little different. You kind of talked about it a little bit.
I wanted to do it 2-3 years ago when I was here, and it only seemed fair to me. If you're willing to come and speak to us and lay out your case, then for me to say, sorry there, whomever, you're out of luck. They asked for more money, they got the lion's share of the deal.
Right. So they asked for three.
Yeah, and so honestly, that's the way I look at it, is if you're willing to come see us and state your story, then and your story is reasonable, and in the past you've lived up to your story, then I don't see why you can't. That's why I asked the question. Can you live with $75,000 instead of 100 more or whatever it may be?
As long as those others, you know, score reasonably high, right?
Yeah.
You know, they can't, they scored really low. Well, let's help them. Just a thought.
Yeah, I know a lot of it depends on the project in terms of, especially with infrastructure, it's sort of like we need at minimum 200,000 to even make this feasible. I've noticed on a lot of these social service projects, it really is, we'll take what we can get, you know, so.
Yeah, they'll take what they can get. Some of the, like our project, the VHA's projects, those are akin to the infrastructure projects because we're doing something with a building, right, or a site, similar to a sidewalk project.
But yeah, I do appreciate sometimes, I know Battleground's been on the bubble where we have had to kind of scramble and say, yeah, we can cut this project in half or we can tackle this aspect of it, which I think most would appreciate. I mean, I think that it'd be to the benefit of this board of adding some of that flexibility.
Doesn't mean we have to do it. It's just another lens. What does the staff think about that?
I have a hard time saying that your project scored better, but we're going to take some of your money and give it to a lower scoring project. I guess it will depend on what it looks like, what the discussion is.
Relative scoring. Because this is not... This isn't like taking the SAT, right? You know, the scoring. There's a lot of subjectivity involved in that scoring, right? That's it. Anyway.
I was just going to ask, in your experience of looking at these, if you have, you know, several different organizations providing the same services, you know, the goal is to spend those as efficiently as you can and to reach the most people. I guess I'm not sure how that figures in, if it creates an atmosphere where you have more people trying to provide the same services, or get into something that's already being done. I guess I don't clearly understand the benefit of doing that, but I see the benefit of spending the money around in some way.
We like to take into consideration economies of scale, not only on the administrative side of the more contracts, of the more cost that it takes for staff to do, which takes away from, you know, being able to do some of the services, but the same thing within the agency. So you're paying for more back office type things when you spread it out to several agencies versus when you have one agency that, you know, you get your economies of scale there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, but it does appear that some of these are returning money or not using it.
Yeah, so in the CBRA, I don't think last year, you know, in the past, Janice has, what we usually do to, you know, it's not that they return money, is we modify the contracts because we want to make sure we spend out, you know. So what we'll generally do is, before deadlines approach, we're like, okay, this is where you're at. What's your projection? Will you be able to spend out? Who needs more money? Yeah, like, you know, we verify, and then we'll do contract modifications to reduce money where it's being underspent, move it to where it, you know, like there's more capacity that is needed. So, you know, in the past, we have had in assistance referee housing with Janice done reductions and increases to their contract as necessary. Share, generally speaking, really spends out, and when we need to, you know, when other programs are underspending, we ask them if they can take more money, and they do, and they spend it out. Lifeline connections, they're just getting started, but historically, they've struggled spending out the money that they've received. That might change. You know, I would expect it to change as they move forward. You know, in terms of what you're talking about, you know, being more nuanced in distributing the funds, I don't know that I'm exactly against it. It's just it you know, we enter more shades of gray in terms of, you know, more nuance you get in terms of decision making, and you know, we just need to be ready. If we do that, we need to be ready to defend it, and we won't always have the platform to defend and explain the nuance that we use. So, you know, to this point, I'm not aware that any recommendation for funding that has been made to the Board of County Councilors has ever changed, and none of the service providers has ever challenged, you know, a recommendation that this body has made. Part of the reason for that is because it's pretty cut and dry and easy to explain.
And they recognize there's always next year.
And they recognize there's always next year.
Yeah, so you shouldn't really complain against the people who are giving you money.
Correct.
Yeah, I've learned that.
Right.
But it does happen. You know, there is a history of that happening.
Well,
yeah.
So
it's like when our bid awards get challenged.
When we go in, and I know in the past when we've scored, there's been some comments that have been placed in there that said so-and-so received this many dollars and they didn't spend it all. Just, you know, you kind of gave us some information. In this new score, this new software that we're using, is that, or this new application that we're using to score, is that are those comments going to be in there that, like, for instance, that Lifeline Connection was awarded, you know, $50,000, they didn't spend it in 2015, we rolled it into 2019. So we can kind of see who got what the years passed when we go in as court, so we can see kind of what's happened.
What we've done so far is we've asked questions to the applicants, and we put that document with our questions in it into their application.
Okay.
And so, like, for Lifeline, like, why are you asking for additional money when you are still... When you still
so when
have
I go
this
view
award.
That, I'll be able to read that.
Correct. It's
okay.
In the document section. But we could also put together a little, like a cheat sheet. I think we did that last year that just said the
right.
status of different agencies. And that
yeah.
can be its own separate document. That
I
you
would like that.
Sure.
It's easier for me to see who we've given to in the past. So let's say, for instance, we'll just look at the asset and economic development portion. You know, we have three of them in there. And like they were saying, if we gave Proud Ground, I'm just throwing a number out, 240, mm-hmm. which would finance, you know, a couple of the homes and then gave the other. We're at that about 350 mark. But if I know that we've given Proud Ground money every year for the past 5 years, and Mercy Corp, maybe we only gave it to them twice, and Hispanic, we've given it to them for 5 times, then it's easier for me to kind of say, okay, because maybe I think, in my mind, maybe all of them are equal as far as I'm concerned. I'm just using it as an example.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to maybe give one to somebody else who hasn't received it every single year for the past 10 years. I just like to look at it that way as well.
Yeah, that's totally your appropriate and your call. I mean, honestly, we don't.
And that was just an example. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that as an example.
I want to make sure I understand on the affordable housing and homelessness, that little bucket amount is $800,000, up to $350,000 of which can go to TIGRA.
Correct.
My understanding.
Correct.
It has to. 350 has to.
It does not have to.
That's what
we made available for TVRA.
Based on past contracting.
Yes. In the request applications, that's what we announced was available for tenant-based rental assistance. And as Rebecca said, the way we came up with these amounts of dollars is we looked at the previous 3 years of what was spent, what was funded, what was able to be spent out. And that's what it has really come out. So we have, like, you know, like 2-3 years ago, there were like $600,000 that went out in the DBRA. And a lot of that money got recycled and had to be sent to share to spend it out over, you know. And, you know, so really $350,000 seems to have been for home TBRA. It doesn't mean that that, you know, that there's definitely a lot more rental assistance that is needed in this community, but for the rules of home TVRA and compliance with HUD, that's what this community seems to have been able to spend out.
Do you get audited on the methodology for granting or for making these awards?
No, in the sense that the local community has say in what we're funding and how we're funding it. We do get asked to explain how we're doing it, you know, and
but the auditing, the federal government, when they audit,
they're not prescriptive,
and the state auditor, when they audit, there's not some benchmark about how the scoring is done. We could spin, I mean, I'm not saying we should do it, but we could literally spin a wheel and give everything to the person that shows up on it. That'd be crazy, right? And the auditor's not going to say anything.
I don't know about the state auditor, but HUD lets, I know some jurisdictions that just the staff just choose what applications to fund. Some jurisdictions have applications that come in throughout the year, and they decide whether or not to do it. It's wide open as far as the selections.
So we have broad discretion,
right?
And but we have historically used this approach that we have because it's very easy to explain.
Well, yes, it's very easy to explain, and remember, there's an interlocal agreement between the county and each of your cities, you know, and part of the, you know, what's behind that interlocal agreement is you have a stake, you know, your city has a stake in this funding that should be coming out is for its unincorporated Clark County and the cities outside of the city of Vancouver, you know, so you have some pretty broad authority. What has evolved into happening has been to make sure that you get input, you get likelihood of getting some, you know, control of funding coming to your community, and the funding that doesn't go into your community, you also have a vested interest and a stake and a say in what's happening.
My last comment on this, and I'm sorry to wrap this all up.
Sure.
I would be open to this notion where if your application gets over a pretty high bar, whether it's numeric or whatever, so that you've gotten into this category of, yeah, this is a good project, but maybe you didn't get an 84, you got an 82, you know? It doesn't mean the 84 should get everything. You've made it across that bar, then we deploy discretion. If you didn't get to that bar, just a thought.
Yeah,
I'm totally comfortable with what we've done before as well. I just know you could be smart about knowing kind of what's going to be out there, and you're a really good program. Almost all of it.
Yeah.
I think we've seen that.
Yeah. I think after this session, I mean, we could really look into that. We'll have some time and opportunity to consider how we want to do things next year.
Yeah.
It's something that we would want to include in the request for application so the applicants know ahead of time how.
I would be, I applaud what you just said about putting little notes in, but I would be very, very careful about slanting.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
It'll just be a history of the funding that was received.
Yeah.
The times you've done it, it's just been factual information.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would expect that from you, but it's just one of those things anymore. Everybody gets
uptight.
Yeah,
I'm
about stuff.
Sorry to bug you guys, but somebody has the room reserved at 10 o'clock, and they're still waiting outside.
10 o'clock?
Yeah, I think they did it on Friday, so it probably is not on this calendar out here.
We usually book it till noon. Yeah.
There will be very soon. Like 10 minutes.
We're flexible.
We only have a couple of things.
Okay.
So should
I'll
be.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. Wow.
Thank you.
You got the timer. We can do it in 10 minutes.
I wanted to very quickly give you a heads up on Evergreen Habitat for Humanity. You know, we've been looking through all the properties that we've had contracts with, and there are two additional ones of the 12, I think, that we reviewed that they're going to. minus estimated share appreciation. That was foreclosed on, went back to Evergreen, and they're rehabbing it for sale. Another one is $41,500 plus minus estimated insured appreciation, and that was sold in the open market years ago, and Evergreen has no staff or documentation that remembers how or why that happened. So we're waiting on responses from Evergreen for those two properties in terms of exactly how much and when they're going to return to the county, and we're continuing to review with other properties. But I'm not expecting anything as severe as that or any of the remaining properties. Those are the two that jumped up. Do you have anything you want to add to that?
Well, what we mentioned to Evergreen is that it would be up to this board on how that would affect any future awards, because three out of 12 of their properties are out of compliance that we had to recollect our funding. So, and I don't know.
One in four.
I'm not sure how they're going to repay the $90,000.
It'll go towards our salaries.
Well, I mean, the things that I would recommend is a period of, you know, first of all, no additional consideration of funding until all the money is paid back to the county, and also consider a period of time of, you know, like, I don't know if it's 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, is something to think about that they're not, you know, we won't accept proposals from them for additional funding. And until some conditions are met. But
you said this is Evergreen?
Yeah.
I assume that's why I haven't heard from this morning.
And the other thing on the agenda is, you know, we have the bus tour tomorrow, and we will be seeing you tomorrow morning.
We're going to Battleground.
8 o'clock from the center.
You've got guys in Dayton, right? At 8 o'clock.
The Battleground Community Center is on the agenda.
Okay.
Yep, it's right there. Yep.